I'm going to read to us just a short little bit from Luke's Gospel. It's Luke chapter 10, verses 38 to 42. If you've got one of the newer Bibles, it's on page 1042. If you've got one of the old ones, it might be a page either way. But it's Luke chapter 10, verses 38 to 42. A very familiar story, I'm sure, to most of us. But it's always great to hear something familiar and see what God has for us in it tonight. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you're worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed, only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." Lord, help us to hear your voice through your word and the words you've given me to share this evening. Amen. Church pastor, popular Christian author, John Ortberg. Anybody read any of his books? Yeah, if you want to walk on water, you've got to get out the boat. Facing your giants, there's loads of them. If you want a good Christian read, you can't go too far wrong with John Ortberg. Well, he tells this story of a time where he had to call up his friend Dallas Willard, who is perhaps an even more well-known and respected Christian author and university professor. And he had to call him up for some advice on how could he maintain his spiritual health in the busyness of a new position of leadership. So he calls him up, asks him the question, and he said that Dallas paused for some time and came back to him with the following comment: "You must do all you can to ruthlessly eliminate hurry." John quickly jotted down the comment and said, "Yep, what else have you got?" And Dallas replied, "Nothing. That's it." You must do all you can do, all you can, to ruthlessly eliminate hurry. Wise words, especially for this sort of time and place, isn't it? We live in an unprecedented era of busyness, where the advances in technology, I mean, just think back, like how technology has changed our lives, even in the last sort of 10 years alone. They have sped up the pace of life. And not only just the pace of life at which we can do things, but the expectations we have about the number of things we could do, how quickly things should happen. How many of us, show of hands, how many of us, when we've ordered something online, get really, really irritated when it doesn't turn up in a day or two? Come on, let's see, honest people. That's good. I ordered a book at the beginning of January and it turned up on Saturday. And I've almost been pacing the house because we live in what I think of, it's like the Amazon effect era, isn't it? We are used to knowing that if I go home and order something tonight, then there's a good chance Amazon will have it through my letterbox tomorrow morning or Tuesday at the very latest. We've kind of, that's become one of the big narratives of the time in which we live. And I think when you factor into that we all live in the beautiful city that is London, which has its own, I think, unique, slightly busy vibe. And if you want to experience or feel like, because sometimes we kind of don't notice it so much, you've only got to go, an hour and a half in any direction outside of London, spend a day, and you realize that the rest of the world just doesn't operate at the pace we do. It just doesn't. It really, really doesn't. Now, busyness, of course, in and of itself, is not a bad thing. How many of us here would say we were quite busy people? Yeah? Plenty of us. Nothing inherently wrong with it. And actually, you find some people really thrive in being busy. We got anybody who's like that? Anyone who just actually, the thought of not doing something drives them nuts? Oh, we got a couple. Fab. No, that's not a bad thing. I've discovered over time that I'm not one of those people. I don't thrive in always having something to do. But actually, busyness, it can be a really positive thing because there are people who get their energy and life from having plenty of stuff to do. And that's a great thing because that's the way God's made them to be. But the danger, I think, it's not busyness, but it's what busyness can drift into. And what busyness can drift into is hurry. That's what Dallas Willard, I think, was getting at, about we needed to eliminate it. Because the thing is that hurry becomes the killer for our spiritual lives. You know, that great sense as we worship tonight of being here, of recognizing God's presence with us. Now, I vote that some of that is not because God is particularly more present here tonight than he was at 10:30 this morning, or he will be at 10:30 tomorrow. But I think it's because when we slow down, we start to push to one side that hurry. And we start to just recognize that God is actually here. I think we need to do that to get to kind of find those moments. Now, I'll try and define hurry a little bit if that's helpful. I think hurry is the point where busyness has actually got to the point where you're so busy that you've stopped engaging with the thing that you're trying to do. Perhaps you've got that point sometimes. You know when hurry hits because there's something you used to really enjoy doing, and actually you get to do it, and you just feel kind of indifferent to it. Or worse, it feels like a bit of a chore to have to go and do whatever it is. Or even worse than that, you know when you've kind of hit hurry because there's something you would love to do, and you look at it in your diary for the end of the week and think, oh, I just feel really resentful about the fact that I've got to get up and go and do that. I think that's hurry. I certainly find this. I think hurry, sometimes we can recognize it when we find ourselves constantly thinking about the next thing while we're in the middle of doing something else. Oh, man, that is a killer. You know, you halfway through doing whatever it is, and you're already, you know, halfway down the next list. That is hurry. In our reading that I've just read to us, I think what we have is a description of what happens when hurry gets in the way of God for Martha. And in Mary, we're given an alternative model by her, and then that's affirmed by Jesus, of perhaps how we are trying to, we might want to try and pattern our lives. So let me just reread that first couple of verses. So as Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. Verse 39. She had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me. In defense of Martha, poor old Martha, I think she usually gets a bad press, doesn't she? I know I've talked on this passage before, and it's the easiest route is to kind of go, oh, Martha, she's... Don't be her. She just totally gets it wrong. What's she like? She's why can't she get it right? We don't want to aspire to be Martha. And yet, I want to offer something in Martha's defense. Because actually, what Martha is doing is totally right by the cultural norms of her day. Martha, we kind of read here and elsewhere, is the head of the household. And she's the head of a household in a time and a place where hospitality is culturally very significant, where your home was almost seen as an extension of community and community life. And as a homeowner, Martha was expected to be the hostess with the mostess. That was the norm. So when people came to stay, the cultural norm was that you fed them, and you fed them really well. Now, we can kind of empathize with Martha because Jesus and his 12 disciples, and who knows if there are other people there as well, have just turned up on her door. That's a minimum of 13 people to have to provide a meal for. Can you imagine if you went home tonight and you just kind of put your slippers on, having come in from church, and there's a knock on the door, and it's 13 of your closest friends and family who've tipped up and they're like, oh, we're here for dinner. And the expectation culturally on you was to say, come on in, I'll just get to the kitchen. That was the norm. And quite frankly, it's understandable, isn't it? If 13 people had turned up at my house for dinner, I think I might get distracted by trying to do what the normal thing to do would be, and to look after them and to feed them well. It's a big task, feeding 13 people. Mary, by contrast, has taken up a front row seat at Jesus' feet to listen to what he has to say. Now, whereas Martha has done the culturally appropriate thing by heading to the kitchen to fix some food, Mary is in about as culturally inappropriate place as she possibly could be. In her actions, she is essentially behaving as if she were a man by taking up a position in Jesus' presence Sitting at his feet, listening to him, it was bordering on scandalous behavior. If the neighbors had caught sight of it, it would have been, all around the town in minutes. Some commentators would argue that by rights, she shouldn't even have been in the room with them. That's how kind of outrageous her sitting at Jesus' feet is. And yet, when Martha complains, when Martha comes to Jesus and says, "Hey, look, Lord, I'm doing the thing that I should be doing, and yet my sister is behaving, quite frankly, outrageously. What on earth is going on?" And yet his reply to her is really clear. Verse 41, "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." Mary, I love that phrase. She's chosen what is needed, or indeed what is better. To take the time to be in Jesus' presence. That's the thing that was better that she's chosen. You've got to think about it, right? God incarnate, Jesus Christ, God in human form, is sat in Martha's living room. And yet she is so distracted that she misses the most important point. That when God turns up in your lounge, that you stop and you spend time with him. See, if you like, Martha has bought into the hurry narrative of her own day. And she misses that God is literally right in front of her. He is sat there in the midst of all of the ordinariness of life. He's right there, and she's distracted and misses the point. And I think that is the same danger that all of us can face too. Because Jesus is in our living rooms. He's in our workplaces, our offices, our classrooms, wherever we find ourselves Monday through Friday. He is in our families. He is present in our hobbies and our interests. Jesus is present by the power of the Spirit in every part of human life. And yet, we can miss him. We can be as distracted as Martha when 21st century busyness tips from being just busy and into being hurried. And if we want to grow in our relationship with Jesus, the first thing we will need to do is to slow down. Otherwise, we might be like Martha. We might miss the thing in front of us. When Ash spoke a couple of weeks ago, I'd love what you said about how Joshua was kind of listening to God and hearing God speak into his life. And I bet that's because Joshua was going at a pace at which he could hear God clearly. And if we want that same, we see that in so many different people in the Bible, hearing that voice of God, recognizing his presence. And if we want that, if we want some of that in our own lives, I believe the first step is we need to slow down. It's a bit like sometimes we'll go to a conference, we might go to New Wine like we do as a church, and again we're like, "Oh, it's amazing, God is really at New Wine." Well, God is at New Wine, but he's also in Ealing, and he's also at the train station and all these other places. And I think the difference is when we go to New Wine, we spend a whole week where God is our focus, where we park a lot of the busyness and hurry of the rest of life. And it's not surprising that when we slow down, I don't think it's that God turns up more. I think it's just that we recognize that he's there. And all of a sudden, we start to see how God is so much more present than we often notice. So our response to hurry is to try and be as radically countercultural as Mary. It's going to involve slowing down. It's going to involve laying down some of our busyness so that we might realize just how frequently Jesus is present in our lives. That he is part, not just of what we do in church on a Sunday, not just part of our quiet time, not just part of our Bible reading time. He is present permanently in our lives. And it'll take a lot of effort. Dallas Willard, he advised John Ortberg, didn't he? He said it was ruthless effort it would take if he wanted to do it. He said it would involve running counter to our culture's expectations of what it means to be productive, useful, and valuable. It will mean we might have to choose not to do certain things in order to make that space. Now, I'm the first person to tell you that this is not the easiest thing in the world to do. I need to hear this talk as much as anybody else. That is for sure. But I think it's a non-negotiable bit of trying to grow and go deeper in our relationship with God. I think it's one of the great things about, we're doing this kind of Bible challenge as a church. That bit of regularity, that having to stop and pause and take that time, those are all, I think a really important way of starting to kind of slow down and start to look for where God is. But it is hard. Like many people, I'm really good at taking on more things than I can actually perhaps handle at times. And when I do get like that, when my busyness tips into hurry, actually that kind of looking for God time can get squeezed. Or worse, I've said this before, but sometimes I think what happens is we kind of just box God instead. We kind of go, this is the God bit of the day. So we might do a bit of prayer, we might do a bit of Bible reading, and we go, God bit done, right, on with living just like everybody else in the world, getting on with our to-do lists, getting on with being busy and being hurried. And I know when I get that, when I get to a hurried point, not only does my relationship with God struggle to find its feet, but I I'm a less nice person. Don't comment, Suze. But I don't enjoy myself as much. I don't experience life in its fullness like God suggests that we should. Now, part of slowing down, I suppose, is learning to say no and kind of growing in our own self-awareness of what our capacity is. It's been a great experience for me being a curate here for the last three and a half and a bit years. It's been learning a lot about myself, of what I am capable of doing, and actually learning that through learning what I'm not capable of doing. I read on a blog recently a little phrase about saying no that's really struck me. I'm still kind of working through this, but I'm going to share it with you just in case it's helpful. This is what the guy in his blog said. He said, saying yes to something good now will lead to saying no to something great later. Saying yes to something that is good now will lead to saying no to something great later. That's a big temptation, isn't it? Because often we will get asked to do things that are good in and of themselves. But actually, if we took kind of 5 minutes to step back and think about it, they might not actually be a part, or it might not be a task that's part of who we're called to be, or the things that kind of God has asked us to do and shape and fill our lives with. And it's really easy when we see something good, or, I'll be often be in a meeting and we'll have like loads of good ideas, and you're like, brilliant, these are good ideas, let's make them happen. And the danger is that what happens a couple of weeks, a couple of months down the line, something really great comes up. An opportunity that makes your heart sing because it's more in step with what God has called you to do. And if you said yes to all those really good things, you can end up having to say no to perhaps that really great thing. And that can, hurry kind of can creep up and catch us like that. It's just one example. So if we want to avoid hurry, then we need to be careful, don't we, about what we say yes to, about what we load our lives with. We need to know ourselves well enough to know, am I a person who actually loves being busy and can handle lots of things? And if I'm not, then I need to be careful not to overload myself with too many things, because I'm going to end up being miserable and it's not going to be doing the sort of things that God wants me to do. So aside from that, aside from saying no, aside from kind of some of that practical stuff about self-awareness, then what I'd like to do is share just three very simple ideas that are all designed to help us begin some of this slowing down process. And they're all designed to work in the midst of modern life. So I've got three ideas. What I'll do is I will share them with you. And I suppose the big idea is you pick the one that you think sounds like a good challenge to have a go at this week. I'll warn you in advance, they are all fairly simple. Each and every one of you is capable of doing any of these this week. But they're all designed to just give you a little bit of a daily pause point. So, idea one, I'm going to call it press pause. It's all about starting to build small moments into each day where we consciously slow down. So, for example, how many of us like a tea or a coffee during the day? Great, me too. How many of us take that tea or coffee and plonk it down next to our desk or our keyboard, or we drink it while we're on the go doing another task? Oh, me, all the time. So, this is the easiest way to start pressing pause. Every time you make a tea or a coffee, go and sit down and enjoy it. Don't try and do something else at the same time. And when you sit down, what I want you to do is to sit down and thank God for that little bit of time that you're going to take over it. And actually, you might even go one step further and kind of just acknowledge that God is there too. Okay, so that's challenge one. Every time you make a tea or a coffee, sit down. It's only going to take 10 minutes. Sit down and enjoy it all and invite God into that time. Remember that God is present with you. Second one is evening rush / slow food. Again, this one, good challenge for me. It's for 1 week is to eat slowly. Often, you know, we will have meals and they're quite functional and we've got to get our food down us in order to go on and do whatever it is next. And if you like, you know, you end up with indigestion 2 hours later. So that's a challenge. Why don't you, for a week, at each meal, take a bit more time? Eat slowly. Enjoy each mouthful of food. Think about how it tastes. And how about before you get into that, how about you say grace? How about, you know, someone, I think it was Pete Gregg once said, that if you say grace before every meal, then that's three extra times with God you've had each and every day. And if you like a snack, four or five. You know, it's great just to take that moment every time before we eat, just to acknowledge that we have this food on our plates because God is the God who sustains our world and has made all of this stuff possible for us. So take our time. You know, Jesus, he was someone that lots of times we read in the Gospels, he took time to enjoy meals with his friends. He took time to enjoy meals with strangers. You know, it happens time and time again. But I can guarantee you that Jesus, you know, he wasn't sat at Martha and Mary's house going, I'm just going to get this down me because I've got another meeting to go to. I dare say. The last one. Now, this is a good one for if you're a driver. I'm not, so I've kind of thought some ways around it. But it's called the inside lane. How about over the next week, you find different ways to deliberately drive in the slow lane? So that might be quite literally. So if you're a driver, it might be that you elect not to try and overtake every other car on your way to work. For those of us who don't drive, maybe it's when you're on the tube or at the train station, you're going to just let those other commuters go rushing past you. I remember when I worked in town, I used to switch between the Jubilee line and the Piccadilly line at Green Park. And there's that huge, long interchange. Yeah, the nods. Nods of people who've done it. And there's the two lanes. There's the kind of slow lane, and then there's the people kind of half running past you. And I got to confess, I was often in the, you know, running lane. So that might be the way you take the slow lane this week. Instead of trying to rush and get past all the tourists or the other commuters, you find that. Maybe it's simply to kind of halve your walking pace. You know, maybe you've got to walk to the tube station in the morning or on your way home, or, you know, maybe, you know, you're around in the day and you walk down to the shops. Slow that walking pace down. And again, enjoy that value of just slowing down and acknowledging in that slowness and that space that, hey, it's a great time to prayer walk. It's a great time just to kind of think about God a little bit, just to, you know, whatever that might be. You know, none of these things are super hard or super, perhaps super spiritual, you might think, but if we believe that God is in all the everyday stuff as much as he is in this sort of stuff like church, then the everyday stuff is where we often miss him. You know, I love coming to church. I love it when we have a time of worship like that. And it's really obvious that God is here. But I suppose the thing I want to grow in my life is seeing that same it's really obvious God is here moments when I'm outside, when I'm doing all the Monday to Friday to Saturday stuff. So pick one. Pick one and have a go. And maybe, I don't know if you're a journaly person or whatever, but try and notice the difference that it starts to make. Because I think what happens when we try and do this, some of this slowing down, we start hitting more of God's rhythm for our pace of life. And I think what we start to do is we get a bit more of the Mary stuff. We start to acknowledge a little bit more some of those other places where God is present. Now it's not an easy thing because it means being countercultural. And maybe that'll appeals to me. The idea of being radical in this day and age is to slow down. I mean, that's quite an odd thought, but it really is. You know, Mary was scandalous. Sitting at Jesus' feet was outrageous in her culture. Slowing down to enjoy your cup of coffee in some areas of modern life is an outrageous concept, because you could be productive in that 10 minutes instead. But I think that's what we've got to do. I think if we want to grow in our prayer lives, if we want to grow in our relationship with God, if we don't want to be like Martha and be distracted from God in our midst, then I think there's no way we can get around it. I think we need to be a little more countercultural, and that begins with slowing down. And the more we do that, I think the more we get to be like we were hearing about Joshua a couple of weeks ago. We start to hear God said, just that little bit more, because we took the time to wait and see where he was. Amen.